The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on December 17, 1982 in New Orleans, Louisiana. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 19, Verse 41.
Aksharam yattarum iti Yat kinchit iti bruyat Tena richeta vaipuman Bhikshave sarvam kurvan Nalam kamena chatmane Translation. The utterance of the word Om signifies separation from one's monetary assets. In other words, by uttering this word, one becomes free from attachment to money because his money is taken away from him. To be without money is not very satisfactory, for in that position one cannot fulfill one's desires. In other words, by using the word Om, one becomes poverty-stricken, especially when one gives charity to a poor man or beggar. One remains unfulfilled in self-realization and in sense gratification. Translation with word-to-word repetition. The utterance of the word Om,
the utterance of the word Om,
signifies separation.
Signifies separation
from one's monetary assets.
In other words,
by uttering this word,
one becomes free from attachment to money
because his money is taken away from him. To be without money is not very satisfactory. For in that position, one cannot fulfill one's desires.
In other words,
by using the word Om,
one
becomes poverty stricken.
Especially when one gives charity
to a poor man or beggar.
One remains unfulfilled
in self-realization
and in sense gratification.
Report by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Bali wanted to give everything to Vamana Deva, who had appeared as a beggar. But Sugracharya, being Maharaja Bali's familial spiritual master in the line of seminal succession, could not appreciate Maharaja Bali's promise. Sugracharya gave Vedic evidence that one should not give everything to a poor man. Rather, when a poor man comes for charity, one should untruthfully say, "Whatever I have given you. I have no more." It is not that one should give everything to him. Actually, the word Om is meant for Om Tat Sat, the absolute truth. Omkara is meant for freedom from all attachment to money, because money should be spent for the purpose of the Supreme. The tendency of modern civilization is to give money in charity to the poor. Such charity has no spiritual value because we actually see that although there are so many hospitals and other foundations and institutions for the poor, according to the three modes of material nature, a class of poor men is always destined to continue. Even though there are so many charitable institutions, poverty has not been driven from human society. Therefore, it is recommended here, Bhikshave sarvam aṅkurvan nālam kāmena chātmane. One should not give everything to the beggars among the poor. The best solution is that of the Krishna consciousness movement. This movement is always kind to the poor, not only because it feeds them, but also because it gives them enlightenment by teaching them how to become Krishna conscious. Therefore, we are therefore opening hundreds and thousands of centers for those who are poor, both in money and in knowledge, to enlighten them in Krishna consciousness. And we form their character by teaching them how to avoid illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, which are the most sinful activities and which cause people to suffer life after life. The best way to use money is to open such a center where all may come, live, and reform their character. They may live very comfortably without denial of any of the body's necessities, but they live under spiritual control, and thus they live happily and save time for advancement in Krishna consciousness. If one has money, it should not be squandered away on nothing. It should be used to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement so that all of human society will become happy, prosperous, and hopeful of being promoted back home, back to Godhead. The Vedic mantra in this regard reads as follows. Paragva etad riktan aksharang yat etad iti tad yat kinchit iti ahatraivasmai tad richate sayat sarvang kuryat richat atmanam sa kamibhyo nalam syat. Thus end the purport of text 41, chapter 19, canto 8. Of the chapter in the matter of the Lord begs charity from Bali Maharaja of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the great Puranam. Now we know why India is broke. Too much Om. Not enough Hare Krishna. The Hindu Samelans, big Hindu Melas, that means gatherings. They all have all the people yell out in unison, "Oh." When they want to make a vote, all in favor say Om. Then they give their charity, not to the Krishna conscious people, but only to opening hospitals for beggars, all these things. So here we can see Supracharya's on. They're going to be separated from all their wealth. That's why they're so poor. They stop serving Krishna because of Shankaracharya. Philosophy, impersonal philosophy. Because, actually, wherever there's Krishna, there's Lakshmi. Lakshmi, or the goddess of fortune, who represents all wealth and opulence, she is always desired by the materialist. They're always praying to Lakshmi to be with them, their fortune to be with them, especially the gamblers and the business people. And in general, the materialist will always want the good fortune or the goddess of fortune to be with them. But she's known as Chanchala. She's very fickle, very whimsical in where she stays. I mean, she doesn't just stay. She's kind of restless. She doesn't stay in one place very long. She stays some time and then goes away. But there's one place she always stays, and that's on the chest of Krishna, on the chest of Narayana. She's always either serving his lotus feet or is on his chest, but she's always with Narayana. So if someone wants to get the goddess of fortune, the easiest way is to capture Krishna. So Krishna, he can be captured very easily by engaging in sankirtan, by glorifying him. Sankirtana means to glorify the Lord. When many people glorify together, it's sankirtan. When several together, it's kirtan. And when it's individual, then it's japa or kirtana, like that. Just like now, all over the world, devotees, they may not be physically in one place, but in consciousness, they're all together. They're all engaged in the sankirtana yajna. And they're all engaged in glorifying Krishna. So this sankirtana yajna of glorifying Krishna actually will bring good fortune to all of the people, both materially and spiritually. Even if a person is engaged somehow or another in the service of Krishna unknowingly, which is known as agyata sukriti, or an unknown good work, an unknown service to Krishna. That means that by accident a person does. Even then that person is benefited. There's a story in the Vedas about a giwik which was going out. And at that moment, one little mouse, I believe, mouse or cockroach or something, it's a mouse, came up and started to poke at the little cotton swab to eat the whatever ghee was left. But the flame was just flickering and about to go out. When the mouse pushed it to eat it, then it shot up, because then the flame got some more wicks to burn on and it shot up. The mouse got scared and ran away. So that mouse was elevated to Vaikuntha because of the service that he had done. He didn't have to take birth again. He had done that service. Because it was taken, just after that the mouse died, it was taken that it had offered arti to the Lord. By pushing, the light went up, it was about to go up, so it had done. But of course the mouse had no idea whatsoever. So this was an agyata sukriti. In other words, even a little service, especially if it's done directly for the Lord, that is so important. In fact, it's the duty of the brahmacharis, especially, to go and beg on behalf of the spiritual master. In India, Prabhupada gave the example that every day the brahmacharis would go door to door to the grihasthas and they would collect alms and they would bring it back to the spiritual master. He personally told us how in their collection, at one point for Bhakti Siddhanta, when they were preaching just in the beginning, the Gaudiya Math had just started in Calcutta, that there was so little collection that there was hardly enough for everyone. In fact, it wasn't enough. There was just enough for Bhakti Siddhanta and a little left. So they would first give everything, they would prepare and give everything to the spiritual master. And Bhakti Siddhanta would be crying that how, and praying to Krishna to send more because it wasn't enough for everyone. So it was a great austerity, it was a test by Krishna, but they continued. And of course, eventually the Gaudiya Math, by the preaching of Bhakti Siddhanta, his purity, it expanded more and more, and they got over those difficulties. So sometimes there's difficulty, and sometimes there's some better situations. But the devotee is supposed to do this austerity in order to develop humility, determination, being detached, whether a person gives or doesn't give, one is not going to stop trying to preach Krishna consciousness or try to collect from the next person. You see, one gives the opportunity. One tries to be more and more expert in presenting in a positive way the proposition of serving Krishna, and depending on that person's good fortune and the devotee's desire, in the mercy of the Lord, that person will be able to engage in service or not. So everyone who by the mercy of the devotee, somehow or another, is able to engage in devotional service, that is to their permanent benefit. We read about how a person to come into Krishna consciousness, they need some previous assets in most cases. Of course, Lord Chaitanya's special mercy is there that even someone without assets can be brought in. But how is that performed? That is done by a devotee engaging someone in service. That starts to build up their spiritual assets. For a person to come in the temple, and if he's immediately has an urge to engage in devotional service, he's eager to hear about Krishna, he has some attraction for chanting, that's a very advanced stage. If someone just walks off the street and has these symptoms, well, that's every indication that that person probably was engaging in some kind of devotional service in his previous life. In most cases, people are not very interested in spiritual life. They don't have very much attraction. And basically, they're absorbed in their material thoughts and material affairs. So it's a devotee, out of his causeless mercy, goes out and engages those people in service, getting donations for them, from them, giving them literature, using the money collected, giving it to Krishna, and using it to preach Krishna consciousness is the greatest benediction for people. You see, that Lakshmi should not be used for sense gratification, it should only be used for the devotional service of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explained that if a person accepts a donation, he becomes indebted to the person who gives the donation. And as a result, he may have to accept that person as his son or daughter in the future life to pay back the debt of that person giving money, if he uses that money for his own sense gratification. Therefore, the profession of begging is considered to be very risky in terms of karma. But a Krishna conscious devotee doesn't use the money for sense gratification, gives it to the service of Guru and Krishna. And so whatever karma, whatever is absorbed, that person becomes, Krishna becomes indebted to him in that sense. So that person gets rewarded by opportunities to serve Krishna more and more and to ultimately achieve complete liberation. Of course, if the devotee doesn't complete the cycle, then of course he may have an unusual son in the future. It's hard to say, but this is the karma involved. So sometimes people are very stingy, they don't want to give any money. I remember that one time the devotee was preaching in Calcutta, and the person was very, very friendly. "Oh, you are great devotees. You have blessed my house." You know, the very, very enthusiastic type Indian gentleman. And after about an hour of talking and preaching and very friendly, the boy asked if you could pay 1 rupee and buy a magazine. She gave him a magazine. "Oh, what a beautiful magazine. This is a wonderful thing. Big house." And then he said, "Yes, could you give a donation of 1 rupee to cover the printing cost?" He said, "Oh, it is not free." Then he gave back the magazine. And then he offered the prayer, "Please, please, take a glass of water." No, "please take a glass of water." He's forcing you to take a glass of water. No. He would give a glass of, finally that, "All right, even give water, I take some water." So sometimes you get people that they're so miserly that to actually do some practical service to Krishna, they just don't want to do it. They're willing to do everything but actually part with that thing which is dear to them, their money, their Lakshmi, and give it to the service of Krishna. One other story, Prabhupada told us that there was a brahmachari who was collecting door to door and nobody was giving any donations. Nobody, nothing. No, nothing, nothing. Just every place he was going, they were refusing. But finally, he went to one house and a lady of the house came out. He said, "Can you offer any donation for the service of Guru and Krishna?" And she called back to her husband who was sitting eating his meal. She says, "There's a brahmachari here. He wants to know if we have anything to give." He said, "No, we don't have anything." said, nothing, anything. He said, nothing, it's anything do we have. So tell him you can have the ashes from our wood fire. He says, oh, you can have the ashes from our fire. You know, what is the value of ash? He said, no value. He said, yeah, you can have our cigarette butts from the ash tree. It's nothing. So the brahmacharya, by that time, he said that nobody has even offered anything. At least they're offering something. So he said, all right, give it, why don't you? Why all the talk? The Prabhupada was laughing. Give me your ashes. Stop talking about it. You know? The point is that even they talk about it, but then he just give it, at least go through the effort of giving something, a benefit. So, generally, the grihasas, we see here, Sukracharya, but his mood. This is, all right, give a person a donation, but tell him it's all you got. Just give him some token. This is Vishnu, he's going to take everything. This is what he's actually saying. This logic may be all right for some ordinary beggar. But of course, this is Vishnu, he's going to take everything. So Bali Maharaj, he's a devotee at heart. His grandfather is Prahlad Maharaj. He knows that my duty is to give to Vishnu everything. He's the possessor. If he's begging from me, and I promise, how can I refuse him? The Sukracharya is using the ordinary morality, ordinary logic of the Vedas, that if some beggar comes, obviously don't give the beggar everything, because then he'll take everything and may misuse it. And you won't have any money, how you'll be able to materially function, and how you'll be able to spiritually be able to engage in your service to Krishna. That's like a material moral instruction of the Vedas, practical instruction. For ordinary cases, this is not an ordinary case, Vishnu himself is coming. You see. So in the same way that there are people might think that, well, I give something to these devotees, something to these people. But actually, even if they gave everything, they wouldn't be the loser. If they give everything to an ordinary beggar, they may lose. But if they give everything to a devotee, even if they give more than what they would think is ordinarily appropriate, actually still they benefit. Unlimitedly. They must so much more. In fact, there was one great businessman in Calcutta who was very devoted to Bhakti Siddhanta. And at the end of his life, when he understood Bhakti Siddhanta, Saraswati Thakur wanted to build a temple at Mayapur for Lord Chaitanya. He gave every last penny, lakhs of rupees, everything. He was what they call lakhapati. That means he was a 100,000-aire, which in those days is like being a millionaire in these days. And he gave everything right to the last penny, the last paisa. Gave the whole thing to Bhakti Siddhanta. And then Bhakti Siddhanta, I believe, only gave one Babaji. That was the only person he gave Babaji. He said he wasn't able to do much preaching. He was always doing business. He was old. He said, you just stay here. Just stay there by the temple and chanted japa for the rest of his life and did this little service in the temple. That just as you go on the gate of the Lord Chaitanya's birthplace, you see on the left, there's a little temple. And that person's deity is there. They put a little deity, and his samadhi, I believe, must be samadhi or some temple there. And that's the history of that person. He gave everything. So actually, by giving everything like that, he became completely liberated. Krishna, then automatically, Ye yata mang prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajamiha. Krishna says, as a person surrenders unto me, so I reciprocate with him. So, naturally that person gave everything. Then Krishna will give him everything. Give him his eternal devotional service. Krishna sees how much we're holding back. If we don't hold anything back, if we're trying, or at least we're desiring, we're trying to not hold anything back, then naturally Krishna will reciprocate fully. So, in every type of service, there are certain times when there is an intense opportunity of surrender. You see. In temple president service, there are times which are very trying, which put a lot of pressure on a person. In time in different preaching. There are these times of pressure. Well, in Sankirtan, of course, the time when the most pressure is put on is during the time of marathon, when one, all out, from morning to night, tries to focus all of the energy. And especially in the West, there's a good opportunity that comes, is this Christmas time, when people still, to some extent, have some kind of a mood of giving and charity. And actually, they're generally just giving to beggars, or they're generally giving just to their own family members. Charity begins at home, it usually ends there too. But in a general, they have a little bit of a giving mood, they get some bonus or some extra paychecks also. So it's an opportunity for the devotees to create an unlimited good sukriti, a good spiritual asset for so many people, even they know or they don't know. If they knowingly go, oh, this is for Krishna, of course they'll benefit even more by their conscious gift. Even if unknowingly they give, still they benefit, as long as we very carefully see that everything goes to Krishna. In fact, if a person knowingly gives, but the devotee doesn't give, then that person even gets the benefit. You see, that Prabhupada also said, but then that devotee will get an offense. But if they unknowingly give, then of course it depends all on the devotee, what he uses it for. Then accordingly they get it, the reciprocation. So everyone in the Krishna conscious movement is giving everything for preaching Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said that gives an unlimited reciprocation. A person who is preaching Krishna consciousness, that means that all the people that are being delivered, say a person contributes, he gets a share of the preaching, which is an unlimited factor. Preaching means to liberate the souls from material birth and death. So that way, they benefit so much that it's beyond any exact calculation. So it's a great opportunity. So if the devotees are very enthusiastic to try to reach every possible person, you see, maybe by just a little more enthusiasm, more concentrated effort, another 10 people are reached, another 20 people are reached. Of course, on this side, we also get Lakshmi, which we can use for preaching, for our programs, for book distribution, which is needed. Not that we are abstract or detached from money. I remember one time Prabhupada gave an example that in India there's this one sadhu. He collects lakhs of rupees. A lot of money, but you see, he won't personally touch it. He'll all put it down in front and he'll turn his hand like this away and put on the whole thing, and he'll have his secretaries pick it all up. But he will not touch money. So then Prabhupada said that I will not go like this, you know, and turn my hand. I will go like this. Two hands. You give. You give as much money as you like. Because I'll use it for Krishna. You see. We're not impersonalists. Actually, what does he need money for? He's they have no real use for money. Still they're collecting money and building temple, even though they're not actually preaching. So it's ridiculous. The whole act they put on. So Krishna consciousness is very straightforward. You see. It's not that we have anything to be shy about. We have every right. We're like tax collectors. We have every right to collect Lakshmi from the hands of materialists, engage it in the hands of, in the service of Krishna. Of course, a preacher is like a white sheet. Meaning that if there are any type of blemishes or any kind of complaints, then in the future that shows up a lot and makes it more and more difficult to preach. So one has to try to avoid creating any kind of stigma in people's mind for giving in the future. That means that, you know, that one has to use some discretion in using the different tactics. At the same time, one has to try to engage as many people as possible, as much as they can be engaged. And by this, then one is actually doing them a big service, and that's also giving the facility of printing so many more books, of doing so many other devotional services for the service of the Lord. So this is the basic understanding. Here Shukracharya is very conscious about preserving the wealth, but we understand that by Prabhupada's instruction, it's more important to be very conscious to see that all wealth is used in the service of Krishna. Then one fortune and one's success in life, spiritually, materially, every aspect is preserved. Just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yogakshemam bahamyaham. You see, I'll give you what you, I'll preserve what you have and provide what you need, you see, for the devotees. So the devotee simply, his responsibility is simply to see that his every thought, word, and deed is engaged in the service of Krishna. And Krishna, he looks out for his devotee. The more we are able to depend upon Krishna, the more Krishna will reciprocate with that. That dependence doesn't mean non-action. It means an active dependence. It means taking initiative to serve Krishna under the guidance of Guru, under the guidance of the Vaishnavas, under the control of the spiritual discipline, and within that service, learning to depend on Krishna, learning to take one's enthusiasm, take one's inspiration from Krishna, not from material causes, which may or may not be there. So this way, one becomes very steady and becomes very determined more and more to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any questions? Yes?
So isn't it ultimately the whole purpose of saving time is not only to collect money, but to help people improve it, even if they can give a penny, as much as you make a lot, even try to give them something. It's not that maybe your devotee is in a lesser position, because he didn't make a lot, and he was out after trying to destroy himself, or kind of mercy is in a lesser position.
Well, best, what did I say? Good, better, and best. One side of it is a devotee, how sincerely he's trying. If a person is trying, not diverting any energy, it's just like everything has its intensity. A person may be engaged the whole time, but then the tempo or the momentum may be, say, half speed of what his potential was. Just like in a type of war situation, a person is just pushed to the limit. When you read the Ramayana, how Hanuman and these people, they are fighting against those asuras with Ravana. The fight was so vicious, and so, I mean, they're lifting mountaintops and they're having their arms cut off, and then they're just going full speed day after day after day. It's going on one after another. Ravana is sending out generals, sending out his son, sending out, and they're fighting. See, of course, Ravana's always get killed one after another, but there was a lot of casualties even on the side of Ram. And of course, by some mystic arrangement, they were able to save everyone. But there were a lot of strain was put on everyone in that situation. So even Mother Yasoda, you see, her intensity of serving Krishna was so great. The gopis' intensity of serving Krishna was so great that it was so intense that like Uddhava came there, he couldn't believe that how every moment they were thinking of Krishna. that they were thinking of Krishna to such extent they are mad after Krishna. That Radharani was speaking to bumblebees. We find that Yasoda, she was always completely in anxiety for serving Krishna. Now the materialist, even the great impersonalist yogi, they can understand that what type of this person is in anxiety. So how can that anxiety be understood as any kind of spiritual asset? But in being anxious to serve Krishna, in being enthusiastic to serve Krishna, that is transcendental. And the proof is that those devotees would never exchange. Right? Ordinary anxiety is the misery. If you offer someone that you take one of what nowadays you take lithium or something like that. Lithium? They give these little pills, whatever. Valium. Take this Valium in exchange for your anxiety. So they say it's much better than anxiety. I'll just take a pill. You see. Or they take something else. They take a drink or something. Everyone wants to get rid of anxiety. But these devotees, they never want to get rid of their anxiety. That anxiety, because it's filled with love for Krishna. So, of course, a devotee should not be, in English they say nonchalant, or they shouldn't be just like, take it for granted. Obviously, there will always be that desire to be more fixed up, to be more enthusiastic. Enthusiasm is not an absolute, it's not a constant, that at this point, you know, this enthusiasm is something which can always have higher and higher dimensions. So of course, in that sense, a devotee never feels self-satisfied that, well, I've peaked, now I'm at the apex, I've done it, there's no higher, no greater position I can go to. That mood is not there in devotional service, it's one of ever increasing. But when it gets to a certain point, it's already so exalted that from any objective viewpoint, you can understand that person is already completely liberated, that there's all the energy is going simply to Krishna, and therefore there's no karma being produced whatsoever. So of course in the beginning, there may be less intensity in our devotional service. Even we're more or less able to keep our consciousness, but it's just like heat. You have water, you put a little heat on it, and you see, like when you see when it gets closer and closer to boiling, the water is moving so fast. You can see if you put a little grain of rice in it, moving around, and finally when it boils, it's just, you know, exploding, the water. So like that, our devotional service can also have more and more heat put on it. You know, not so much that we can't handle it, but gradually we go on trying to increase that type of intense link with Krishna. So in that sense, one shouldn't take it for granted that, well, one should always be trying to do more. But if a person is sincerely trying, and if he's not engaging in any other type of activity, his mind is absorbed in the service, of course he should be trying more and more to increase that intensity, increase the fixation on Krishna, the focus on Krishna. And of course, that's completely transcendental. That's absolute good. There's nothing wrong with it. Now, if a person is able to even increase upon that, say you're able to reach so many people, just like person is able to engage 100 people, and they give something for Krishna. So that's wonderful. There's nothing to say wrong about that whatsoever. That person is glorified above all great yogis and above everything else. But if another person is able to use the same opportunities and able to engage 100 people twice as much, or unable to engage the 100 people, 200 people in the same period of time, so that's better. Not that we don't say it's better. Surely it's better. If Krishna is going to judge, each person may have a capacity. It may be that person is even working only at half his capacity. You know, due to some materially, a person may have that much physical strength that he's working at full capacity, reached 100. Another person may be so physically and mentally strong, he could reach 500, but he means 250. You see, so in that sense, Krishna is going to be the ultimate judge to what a person has a capacity also materially. You see, just like sometimes when a cripple or something does some devotional service, people are very amazed that, oh, that person is crippled, how is he doing it? Because he has a little less capacity for material activity, still he's doing it like that. So Krishna is going to see better, good, better, and best. You see, best, of course, is if one is completely absorbed. You see, at a certain point, it becomes, at least from our point of view, that a person is so fully absorbed that there's no spilling of any energy. And the person gets that reciprocation from Krishna constantly. And the people are engaged not only in giving, but actually they become attracted to surrender to Krishna, to chanting Hare Krishna. So we're always trying to go higher and higher in our intensity of devotional service, but we don't look at it in a material sense, that if a person doesn't have the same capacity, but he's trying hard, then we're completely, that person is glorified. We can't consider exactly on that level. But of course, a leader or a senior person who's responsible to help that person in devotional service should see whether or not the person is working up to their capacity. You see, if they can work even, if they have a greater capacity, then it's going, that person is going to get more reciprocation from Krishna by giving out more energy. And the only way you can know is sometime by putting a little pressure. And then you see, like in business, what they do is they give a person more and more and more and more responsibility until finally the person can't handle it. Then they reduce them. They have a term for that. They'll keep putting a person in promotions until he gets up to the senior vice president. He can't handle it, put him down, it's finished. They never get another promotion again. As long as the person takes on more and more and more and more and more and more responsibility and handles it, they keep on promoting it. And if he peaks off, he doesn't handle it anymore. All right, that's all right. You stay in this position. It's very hard for them to get promotions. So it's like that in devotional service. We go on, the only way we can know what our capacity, take a little more. And if we find that our consciousness is strained, we get just too distracted, it's too, all right, then we say, you know, then we take the humble attitude and we try to maintain whatever level we can. So these types of intense pressure, it also builds up, it's like weight, you know, builds up our capacity also. Sometimes we take just intense for a short time, we can take a little extra load. All the time we may not be able to maintain, but for a little time we maintain, and then that actually increases our capacity more and more. In the Asian Games in Delhi, a person, he did a press or something, snap, I don't know. He did some kind of a weightlifting, he did 358 kilos, broke the world record. And so they only allowed three in the Olympic Games, but he'd already broke the record, and then the other person said, I want a chance. Because he had done 357 or something like that. So then because he was already, so there's extra snap. It wasn't, the competition was already over, but this is just for the making the record because all the judges were there, it was official. So then the other person snapped 385, you know, and a half. Beat by half. Then the other person, I get one more chance. And he did, you know, whatever, the 350, whatever was another half a key. Because, you know, at that moment there was so much pressure and there was such, you know, so that they had some extra special. Were the times when if I didn't, you know, if I just stuck to it and I tolerated that stress and I worked under it and tried to fulfill the duties that Prabhupada gave, that was the time when I, after I surrendered to the stress, after I just like went with it, I didn't try to fight it, but instead I tried to surrender and just go with it, I found the most intense feeling of reciprocation with the previous spiritual masters and Krishna. So, generally we all have our little governor in our consciousness, how much we want to give to Krishna. We don't realize it, but we have a governor. That we have a little limit, that we think that up to this point, and then then Krishna takes us to that point, and we don't want to surrender beyond that point. But if we just surrender, then we realize that, well, in this way we go up to higher and higher reciprocation with Krishna. Sometimes it's physical surrender, sometimes it's more mental attachments, different things. But That's why this Krishna conscious movement itself is a, what do you say, it's a, what do you say, boiling the ghee, something like that. It's where you actually, it forces people to surrender. It's very difficult for materialists and non-devotees to stay in the Krishna conscious movement. If they sense lies of different people, they, after some time they all run away. It's too difficult. Because Krishna forces the person either to surrender or, you know, to just find it incompatible. So of course generally in associated devotees, people find it compatible when they're sincerely desiring to be God conscious, desiring to achieve the truth. Then they just go on advancing. If a person is not sincere, then there's some conflicts in the person's mind. The person gets many chances to get over that. And if a person can get over all these little conflicts, then a person can achieve Krishna even in this life. Hare Krishna. More questions? More questions.
Where does the stress come from when someone is increasing his emotional stress? Why is it there?
Attachment. Sometimes the distress is external. Sometimes obstacles are put up by demons. So that creates a kind of a distressful situation. But if a person, by learning to surrender to Krishna at those times by being tolerant. You see, we have to learn tolerance. It's something that we've forgotten. Something that can be a tolerance level can be built up. You see, just like in the airplane that was flying over, and in Singapore Airlines, there was one person who was very nasty to the steward, but the steward completely kept his cool. And Just returned by saying, "Yes, sir, I will." The person was completely obnoxious, completely, you know, to say off the wall or something. But the person just became very cool in reciprocation and just very suavely, you know, replied to the person. I was in Eastern Airways and some person was drinking a few drinks and just said a little something. And the American guy, he said, "You're not getting any drinks? You want to stay on the plane? No drinks. Otherwise, you get off." You know, it's just like that. You know, I mean, this is the way they dealt. You know, it's just the, you know, the person immediately a little bit of thing. He could have held it nicer. Listen, buddy, he had too many. Take it. You know, but no, like the guy was so much on the edge, that steward. As soon as he said, immediately, you know, he got all riled up. And so, you know, it's a question of training. Therefore, Singapore Airlines gets the number one rating in the world. It's an Eastern rate. It's not even on the rating. I mean, it's within America. They don't even make the top 10 anywhere. But Singapore and Swiss are considered to be the best service in the world in terms of airline. Just because it's through their training. So we can also be trained in tolerance. You see. Generally, in America, we're trained not to be very tolerant for any kind of austerity. Rather, they go to no end of creating new inventions, how you can avoid any kind of austerity. You see, well, living in India, one has to always take austerity because there's just no facility for anything but austerity. There's no, you know, modern facilities like that. But on one level, here I find it very austere in the West for other reasons, different type of austerities. Anyway, it's all relative. But the main thing, we build up our tolerance to accept these different kind of difficulties that may come up, and rather than relate with them or start to become body conscious and mental conscious unnecessarily, to become agitated by them, we overcome them by fixing our mind on Krishna. Yes? Yes. Especially if you tolerate it, and just like it says in the Nectar of Devotion, say that you stub your foot. At that moment, instead of saying, "Ouch," or something, or whatever, something, some other thing. They used to say, Krishna. So that you don't have to take another, just by that alone, you can get liberation. So the point is that when you're in distress, then where do you turn to? You turn to your mind, you turn to some other shelter. Where do you take shelter? When the pressure is on, where do you go for shelter? You know, I know devotees who chant Hare Krishna, but when the going gets rough, when they get agitated, when they have difficulty, you know, they go off and take a drug on the side. They're blue, kind of half blue. They're very weak. If there's any difficulty, they can learn. They don't take shelter of Krishna. Instead, they go and take drugs. Therefore, they take a marijuana or something. Of course, those type of people are not generally in our temples, but I know there's people like that. That as soon as the going gets a little rough, they surrender to Maya. You see, instead of chanting more intensely, hearing more carefully, reading the shastras, absorbing, taking shelter of my mind is being agitated by something, either my own body or some external cause. And so that moment to actually depend on, take shelter of Krishna, that is the best training for us. If we learn to depend on Krishna in difficulty, then at the time of death, when it comes, the final exam, when that death is facing us, we're not going to turn to something else and, oh, I'm in big trouble now. Give me this, give me no. Please. Just surrender to Krishna. Let me go back to Krishna. Death is a very painful thing. Painful situation. So how are we going to face that if we're already completely habituated to facing so many difficulties and always depending on Krishna? If it's a reflex, any difficulty, can we learn to depend on Krishna? Then naturally death will depend on Krishna and every situation will depend on Krishna. Therefore the devotee is always protected. But if we learn to depend on any other material thing, then we have to again come back till we learn not to rely on any designation on anything else other than Krishna. He's our only crutch, he's our guide, Guru and Krishna. Remember the words of the Guru. Is that all right? People always make so many crutches. America is the land of crutches. Big leaders, depending on having, you know, so many drinks a day, and so many pills, and so many this, and so many that. They don't have it. So many cigarettes. And actually, our philosophy, simple living and high thinking, means we eliminate unnecessary crutches. You see, we're already limited. We have to depend on the body. If the body doesn't move and gets sick, we can't go. We're already limited. But as far as possible, for our own spiritual and mental inspiration, we depend on Krishna. So they say, well, that's a crutch. But that's the only real thing. That's the only bona fide crutch. So if you don't believe in God, then to say depending on God is the crutch, well, it's a non-existing crutch, so therefore we have no crutch. And if you believe in God, well then it's... If you don't believe in God and you say you're only depending on God, well then what's the crutch? If I believe on a crutch that doesn't exist, then I'm doing... That means I'm self-sufficient. If you're an atheist. Right? And if there is God, well then what's the harm? He's the ultimately supporting the whole universe and everything. So what's the harm? Everything's depending upon Him. By definition, God being the basis, the origin, and the creator of everything. So to depend on Him is completely valid. Everything's depending on Him. So whether you believe or don't believe, to depend on God, there's nothing wrong with it. One's independent of everything else, self-sufficient.